out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is June the 20th, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. And we would normally have Eddie Morrison with us today. He's unavailable, but we have got a special guest in his place. I'm very pleased to welcome the organiser of the Yorkshire Forum, Liam Kernahan, who we haven't actually had on the Daily Nationalist before. Liam, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. It's good to be on the show. Thanks, Van. It's really great to be here.
Well, I'm really particularly interested in this email that you sent me the other day, and we'll go into a bit of British news as well, and we'll talk a little bit about the Yorkshire Forum. But specifically, this email was to do with Antifa and the criminal background of one particular character. Because I think you wanted listeners to understand just what it is we are up against in the UK, just how depraved the Antifa actually are. And I hadn't really heard of this guy before, but I can remember hearing his surname and seeing something about him in the news. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this guy? I believe is he from Manchester or somewhere like that?
Yeah. Essentially where he's from, Sven, it's a place called Chorton-cum-Hardy, which is Manchester South. It's traditionally the place where the Manchester Irish community lived and still do so. Dominic Noonan is part of the Noonan family clan. They're essentially Irish travellers that have been living in that particular part of the city for several decades, several generations of them. His brother, Desmond, who was stabbed to death in 2005 or 2006 by his own drugs dealer, essentially ran the family crime network in Manchester and the northwest of England. The Noonans have got extensive connections with the anti-white identitarian organizations such as Antifa and Red Action. They were also, and still are, I think, closely affiliated with the Provisional IRA, and have been for several decades. As I said before, his Dominic Noonan's brother was stabbed to death by his own drugs dealer. And interestingly, Desmond Noonan was a marriage through, was an uncle through marriage of Mark Duggan, who's shooting to death by the police in 2011. Sparked nationwide rioting across the United Kingdom, which caused a lot of disruption, and South London particularly was hit very badly by the rioting. And
I remember. Duggan
was shot dead.
Yeah, I remember. Just thinking, listeners are probably aware of it and remember it. This Mark Duggan, he was a black gangster figure. You had pictures of him making pistol signs that were available online, and the police said that they thought that he had a gun, and they obviously had good reason for thinking he had a gun, and they shot him. in self-defense. They thought they were going to get shot otherwise. And it was put across as if the police had executed this guy. And suddenly, as if overnight, there were black riots and all these blacks got together. Now, if what you're saying here is, he was sort of related to this gangland figure who was involved in drug pushing, a big drugs kingpin. Well, that would explain how come he had the connections to start off all these riots, wouldn't it? It would show that he's connected to the gangland, connected to the particularly the drugs world, and that was why they were able to mobilize all these blacks together. Do you think?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, another thing worthy of consideration, Svan, is it wasn't just the blacks rioting. It was you had a lot of what I'd call the submerged tenth of white society involved, essentially just white trash from the Singh estates. There was extensive involvement from them as well. But Desmond Noonan wasn't related via blood to Mark Duggan. I think Desmond Noonan was married to Mark Duggan's maternal aunt. So Desmond Noonan was the brother-in-law of Mark Duggan's mother, if you know what I mean. So it gets a bit tenuous. But yeah, I mean, there was quite a bit of overlap. I mean, during the 2011 riots, which also hit Manchester as well as the other metropolitan centres, apparently Dominic Noonan, who we'll return to in a moment, was apparently seen with mobile phone, sort of marshalling the events in Manchester, the rioting as it unfolded in Manchester in the various criminal districts and housing developments. So that's what he was about. He's quite a notorious figure. In 2015, believe it or not, he announced that he was considering, it never actually came to fruition, but he announced that he was considering standing as a parliamentary candidate, I think, for Manchester South in the 2015 general election. Although, you know, it was just a lot of hot air. He didn't do anything. But, you know, the idea that it actually think of that is quite revelatory in some respects as to how these networks operate. You know, if he feels confident enough to even consider doing something like that, you know, he feels as though he's some sort of, you know, big man in the community. He's like a local Mr. Fix-It that can get things done. And it's quite worrying, you know. I mean, MPs, I mean, we know what MPs are like, but, you know, in the mind of the average normie, an MP is sort of like a man in a suit that sits in a fancy office behind a telephone and sort of tries to help people. Well, you and I know that it's true otherwise. But you know, I mean, you've got all these people in Manchester. Oh, you know, Dominic Noonan, he's going to be standing as an MP. We'll vote for him. You know, but it didn't amount to anything. It was just a lot of talk. But another thing he did was round about the same kind of time. I think it might have been either before or after the general election. There was this giant Ferris wheel type effort in the centre of Manchester. It's a bit like the London Eye, but a sort of Manchester equivalent. It doesn't exist anymore. It's been removed. Dominic Noonan essentially hijacked the wretched thing, climbed aboard, and he says, "I'm in charge of this machine." And he took it up into the air, and leaving, there's like loads of people stuck on this Ferris wheel, like old people, like little wee toddlers and stuff, sort of stranded and marooned in midair for about 3 or 4 hours. It was some kind of one-man protest about the way he'd been treated by the authorities, particularly the police. Which brings us now to the offences that he's committed, dating back to the early 1980s. I think 1981, he started essentially grooming young boys as young as 11 and 12 years old for sexual favours. And it just wasn't a one-off. This was a consistent pattern of behaviour that lasted until, the 2010s, around about the time that he was, you know, involved in the riots and so on and so forth. But he got sentenced to 11 years for these sexual offences. On top of a current 11-year sentence that he was already serving for, you know, communal garden type gangster offences, you know, demanding money with menaces, protection rackets, nightclub door rackets, that kind of thing, you know. So it just goes to show you what sort of people are opposed to us, you know, and why I think, you know, we've got the moral high ground. I mean, the left go on and on and on about, you know, how bad nationalists are and about how nobody likes us and we're all scumbags and stuff like that. But I think this particular case illustrates, you know, it's the reverse is true. Back in the middle 2000s, I think it was 2004, 2005, shortly before Desmond was murdered, there was a television documentary televised, I think on BBC One, called A Very British Gangster, that illustrated all their shenanigans in and around Manchester and the northwest of England. It's well worth a look. And you can watch it if you link onto the Heritage. It's a magazine called Heritage and Destiny, which is an excellent magazine. And if you go onto their website and you link onto the news story about Dominic Noonan, you can view the television documentary in full feature length viewing. It lasts for about, I think, 70 minutes, so it's almost like a feature length type thing. It's quite an interesting thing to watch, you know. It's not as if they did particularly well out of a life of crime. I mean, they essentially terrorized the neighborhoods in which they lived. They just stayed there. I mean, you normally think of gangsters. They leave the area in which they grew up and they go on to better things. Like, they got a mock Tudor mansion on the outskirts of town, but the Noonans, they didn't. They just stayed on their council estate. It's not as if they were, you know, they were up there with the big time people, you know. They were nasty in their own way, but they were just pretty well indicative of the sort of people they came from, you know. So
I would say they were rewarded, weren't they? They were nasty people, gangsters, drug dealers, just violent, horrible scumbags, and yet they were rewarded with 70-minute documentary by the BBC, which is obviously lauding them. I mean, it's making them out to be great figures. Otherwise, why would they film it? You know, they're encouraging it. And would you say that maybe it was because of their support of these leftist causes and their support for Antifa that they were rewarded with that?
The television journalist who compiled and investigated the story was a fellow called McIntyre. I think it was a David McIntyre or something. And the series, because it wasn't just a single program about the Noonans, he did other investigative type programs. He was a fellow called McIntyre. The program's called McIntyre Undercover. It was fairly impartial, to be perfectly honest with you, Sven. You know, it was fairly impartial. I know what you're saying about the BBC. They're no friends of ours. But I don't think for one moment it particularly glorified them. If anything, it just made them out to look really tatty and sort of like, you know, low rent.
Well, it may well have glorified them to, you know, to their own circle, to the drug users and the muggers.
And people like themselves and certain sort of like antisocial, anarcho, anarchist types. You know, it's you know, the sort of people you get living in big cities. You know, they've got no loyalty to anybody apart from themselves. Yeah, it might have sort of. Oh, look at me, I'm on television, I'm in some big fancy documentary, I'm a big man now. But I was speaking to a few people, and they were quite unimpressed by it. They says, "Well, look, if that's the sort of people they are, I mean, you know, nasty bits of work and so on and so forth." But you know, I mean,
do you think they were putting the proceeds from their life of crime? They were sort of siphoning some of that off to these Antifa organizations. Do you think that was?
Yeah, I'm sure they were. I'm sure they were. Well, maybe, you know, perhaps if they weren't doing it, they were certainly involving themselves on a hands-on, practical basis, if you know what I mean. You know, it's a, oh, do you know any nasty Nazis that need sorting out? Call the Noonans, you know. Let's sort them out, you know. And apparently they were a real thorn in the side of the movement up in the northwest of England back in the 80s or 90s. I mean, I wasn't living in the north of England during that period. And I'd taken out a sabbatical from the movement in the 90s and the early 2000s. So I wasn't in the loop as to what was going on around that sort of time period. But I've heard it from various sources that they were quite active. And of course, you still had the IRA thing going on then as well. You know, so they were tied up with that.
Was Hope Not Hate around at that time? I'm just wondering if there's a connection.
No, well, Hope Not Hate didn't materialise until, wasn't formed until 2004, so it's not really applicable. We're talking about the 80s and the 90s, or later 80s and 90s and early 2000s. I mean, there was something called Red Action that was on the go from the mid 80s. Until the 90s, they were quite active, not just in the northwest of England, but right across the country.
Well, Eddie was telling me, Eddie was telling us last week about Antifa in the 70s and how there were gangsters involved back then, and they stole a lorry that was loaded up with concrete and bricks and backed it into John Tyndall's living quarters. And that John Tyndall was shot at as well. So this isn't an isolated incident of some low life criminal involved with the Antifa. I mean, this would seem to be something that regularly happens. That these are the sort of people that are involved in it.
If my memory serves me correctly, the shooting incident with John Tyndall happened way back in the 1960s. I think 1964, 65. And it was, there used to be an organization called the 62 Group, that was formed from various, hard left groupings to combat the burgeoning nationalist movement, that was appearing in the late 50s, early 60s as a result of the, immigration from the Commonwealth, you know, West Indians and Indians and Pakistanis. There were various organizations. There was John Bean's British National Party, the old British National Party of the late 50s, early 60s. You had Colin Jordan's National Socialist Movement. You had John Tyndall's Breakaway Movement that came out of that. It's called the Greater Britain Movement. It was about 1964, 65. And I think that's when the shooting incident occurred. Somebody shot into the headquarters of the Greater Britain Movement, which is, I think it was Princedale Road or something. Also around that kind of time, I think Jerry Gable, who was active with the 62 group, he broke into, there was a young historian that was just starting out called David Irving. I'm sure you've all heard of him. Jerry Gable broke into his house to try and steal some documents as to David Irving's new book that he was working on at the time. I think it was called The Destruction of Dresden or something. So, you know, these people have got a track record going back decades. I don't think they were called Antifa back then. They had various names they called themselves. Back in you had the 62 group back in the 60s, and then you had the anti-Nazi League in the 70s and early 80s. And then, you know, from about 85, 86, you had Red Action. And they were active throughout the second half of the 80s and into the 90s. And then Antifa, they kind of start developing in the early 2000s. And then you got Hope Not Hate, which was the sort of friendly face, if you know what I mean. It was the sort of public friendly face of the anti-fascist movement that was formed in 2004, partly as a split from Jerry Gable's Searchlight organization that was set up then, because they had a bit of a falling out amongst themselves in the first few years of the decade in the 2000s. So that's sort of like a potted chronological history of the anti-fascist activity in Britain during the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and well, early 2000s.
And it's always been involved with this criminal underground. And the criminal underground,
yeah,
and the gangsters, I mean, they're all involved with the intelligence services as well, feeding back information to the secret police and the rest of them. That's a lot of the reasons why they don't actually get busted, is because they're feeding information. There's like a crossover point between the intelligence services and the gangsters, and you can look back at the history of it, and it goes back to the Jewish bankers having their connections all the way across Europe. And of course there's Jews that are involved in this as well, that Eddie was telling us last week. It's a history that the general public just don't know anything about. I mean, they watch the television and they see that there's nationalists in court or what have you, and then they'll have someone from Hope Not Hate giving a comment on the nationalists. All the newspapers will be reporting on a group like Britain First, and then you'll get a comment, and it will be somebody from Hope Not Hate, or it will be Jerry Gable. It'd be these people that are involved with the criminal underworld, that are making us out to be horrific, violent people, when they're the sort of people that get shot, that abuse children, that shoot at nationalists, that drive lorries into their buildings, and we're the ones that get persecuted for this. You don't see any of the Antifa ever getting arrested for their activities, and yet we've got people like Simon Shepherd, who we had on last Monday, and he's just been jailed for 9 months for apparently using a racist word, using a naughty right. word to a Sky engineer. 9 months right. he's been given for that.
Right.
And, he's quite adamant that he didn't racially abuse his next-door neighbour. He did put down his next-door neighbour, I believe, to the Sky engineer, but out of hearing of the next-door neighbour. And why, you know, Simon Shepherd is a really non-violent person. I mean, he's a really nice guy. And now he's sitting in jail for 9 months while these Antifa thugs who, you know, but just I can just think of one instance, and that would be the Southwest Forum, where a gang of masked Antifa thugs turned up with motorcycle chains and weapons, threw stones through the windows, punched Julie in the face, punched an elderly man in the face who passed away, I think, 6 months later. He was disabled. And, you know, just a gang of thugs intent on causing violence and mayhem. And none of them were ever caught. You know, only 5% of crimes are now solved in Britain. 95% go unsolved. And yet they can still put people like Simon Shepherd in prison just for saying that he's not very happy about this black guy moving in next door and taking the council, having two council properties, I believe, was the source of it. Have you heard about what happened with Simon Lee?
I knew he was awaiting trial. I mean, I went to one of his preliminary hearings. It was back at the beginning of the year, I think January or February or something. But it's news to me about him being sent down. But what you say about Simon is absolutely correct. He's a completely non-violent bloke. You know, I know him reasonably well. Yeah, and what's happened to him is absolutely atrocious. But going back to the what you highlight is the Jewish connection with gangsterdom and anti-nationalist activity. There was one particular character who was active back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s called Jack Spot. That's what he was known as. His real name was Jack Corner, but he was known widely as Jack Spot, and he was very active with the 62 group in the 1960s. He took part in the Battle of Cable Street way back in 1936. I mean, he was born 1912, and he died in 1996. That would have made him, 81, 82 years here. 12th of April, 1912 to 12th of March, 1996. Jack Spot Corner was an English gangster. He grew up in the Jewish ghetto street in Fieldgate Mansions, Whitechapel. Spot Corner claimed to have been taking part in the Battle of Cable Street. In his version of the event, Spot and the mob charged into the anti-fascists with full power, injuring as many black shirts and police as possible. So that gives you an idea of what sort of people they are. Going back to the Southwest Forum, it was January last year. I was actually present, and I saw everything that happened. It was absolutely abominable. The meeting took place on the outskirts of Bristol. Bristol is a very bad town, for various reasons. One, it's got a very vociferous left-wing student population. Two, it's an old seaport. For some reason, you always get these sort of people living in seaports. I mean, Liverpool's the same, Cardiff's the same, Manchester's the same. And three, you've got a long-term resident non-white population. Bristol was multiracial long before the rest of the United Kingdom was, because of the seaport connection, as was Cardiff and Liverpool. You know, so you always get these sorts of people living in these towns. You know, sort of seaports. They're always sort of hotbeds of criminality. I lived in Cardiff for 12 years, and by God, was that a rough town. No, I lived there from 1992 until 2005. I couldn't wait to get out of the place. It was blooming awful.
It is interesting, this connection between violence, criminality, and the left wing. And, you know, these people that are put across as being these great heroes, these counter-demonstrators to the nasty Nazis, and they're all a bunch of criminals and thugs. Well, what's happening with the Yorkshire Forum at the moment then, now that we brought up the subject of the forum, Liam? Because there hasn't been one for a while, so what's going on there?
No. The last Yorkshire Forum was May last year. I've been busy with various work commitments, which has made it very difficult for me to sort of get anything going, you know. And then you've had problems with the London Forum. I mean, Jez Turner, he's currently incarcerated at the moment. You've got the thing with the National Action Trial as well. So. Also, I was helping out Jim Luthwaite with his election campaign back in the spring. So yeah, I've been quite busy, but we will be having one, and I promise there will be one before September. I've got a provisional lineup of speakers that I won't mention just yet, but I've got some speakers on hold at the minute. So we will be doing it quite soon. So we'll come back with a bang. You know, we haven't gone away. We're still here. In Bradford South.
Yeah, I always enjoy the Yorkshire Forum. I think that was the first franchised forum that there was from the London Forum, and now there's the North West Forum in America.
I think you're right there.
Southwest,
Scotland. It was the first external forum outside of London. Of course, this encouraged the development of other forums. There was the Welsh Forum. There have been token forum meetings in the other constituent parts of mainland United Kingdom. And there was a Welsh Forum that was back in the summer, I think June 2016, and then I think the beginning of 2017. I'm mistaken. It was the beginning of 2016. It was about 2 years, 3 months ago. There was a Scottish forum in Edinburgh. It's the first time I'd ever been to Edinburgh. I mean, did you go to that? I can't quite remember.
I missed that one. But just thinking of all the spin-offs from it, I mean, I would say that the London Forum is probably the most successful nationalist conference that we've ever had. When you think of the if you're going by the number of speakers the number of views that there was on YouTube before the channel got taken down, and the number of other nationalist conferences that were spin-offs from it, that were franchises from it. I mean, it's got to be the most successful nationalist conference that there's ever been, really. You think it was once every 2 months as well. And it just shows that it can be done. And it was done first of all in Britain. I mean, America has AMREN. I think that's once a year or twice a year. That's all it is. They don't have spin-offs from it like we did. So yeah, it'd be great to see the Yorkshire Forum back.
Yeah, sure. You see, the thing is, the originator of the London Forum was something called London New Right, that doesn't exist anymore, and that was set up by a fellow called Troy Southgate, I think round about towards the end of the first decade of the century. It's about 07-08 he set it up. I mean, Jez was liaising with Troy at the same time, and you know, Jez used to come to the meetings, but you know, for one reason or another, the London New Right meetings, the attendance started to drop off. And you know, I mean, Jez got the London Forum going, which went from strength to strength, which was initially for people in the United Kingdom, and then he started getting speakers from other parts of Europe and then North America as the thing started gaining momentum. The attendance started to increase, from 50 to 60 to 70, and I think the 100 attendee mark was breached, I think, round about 2015. It was the first time 100 people had attended a London Forum. I think, going back to Troy, so currently now, I think he lives in Portugal, does Troy, so he's moved his family over to Portugal, where he lives now. But I haven't heard from him in quite some time. But, you know, such is the way of things. You know, people move on, things change.
Well, hopefully, you know, Jez will be out, hopefully he'll be out after 6 months instead of 12 months with good behaviour, and then the London Forum will start up again. As you say, you've got the Yorkshire Forum coming up. You're going to have another one of them soon, and there's the Southwest Forum coming up at some point in the future, which I will let listeners know about. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Liam. This has been a very enlightening conversation for myself and for our listeners. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.